Professor and the Fight Nerd Radio.
This is the Fight Professor, Stephen Quadros, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
This is Danny the Upgrade Lovenstar, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
This is Martin Cannon, you're watching the FightNerd.com. This is Nathan Africa 2, and you just got schooled by the Fight Nerd.
See it? What is it?
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Not quite live from New York, you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
Hey, this is the Fight Nerd, and welcome to another edition of Fight Nerd Radio. Today is August 4th, days away from UFC 101 in Philly and WEC 42 in Las Vegas, and a few days past Sengoku 9th battle. Coming up later in the show, we have a special guest, three-time King of Pancrase and former UFC heavyweight champion. Now he's the host of Inside MMA on HDNet. We have El Guapo, Bas Rutten, joining us to talk about lots of fun stuff, and we are going to have a lot to talk about for sure. Before we go any further, I need to thank the people that keep the electricity running on my iMac. They would be CagesideMMA.com, HoodlumFightGear.com, FindMMAGym.com, and MMA Worldwide Magazine. Without them, how else could I possibly Twitter all day long? I also want to thank Carl Kern from Fighters Warehouse New York. This past Sunday, him and his team ran the first ever New York Mixed Martial Arts Expo in Long Island at the Uniondale Marriott, and it did not disappoint. We got there at noon, myself, Photo Kenny, and Francis, my PR guy, and it was crazy in there. It wasn't a big, huge room, but it was the perfect size for this kind of show, and the fact that it was smaller meant shorter lines for the fans, which was definitely a big plus. They were able to bring out Andre Arlovsky, Sean Shirk, Jamie Varner, Jens Pulver, Ron Van Cleef, Tim Kennedy, Orlando Rivera, and a few other surprises. And Aaron Richmond from the MMA Fight Council brought out Chuck Zito and Alan Goldberg as well. Unfortunately, one of the guys who didn't make it was Clay Guida. He was scheduled to be at the show, but unfortunately, one of his sponsors backed out or something, and he wasn't able to get there, even though Clay said he did want to be there, and that's unfortunate because I really wanted to talk to him. There were also lots of vendors there. I got to meet a lot of people from different companies, including Bonebreakers, 8th Degree Black, My House Fight Gear, Manumission Phytoceuticals, which is a skincare company for fighters. Strange name, but good products. Windy, Tap Out, Silver Star was there, American Fighter, and there were a few Long Island Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools as well. They had a nice little cage set up in the middle of the showroom floor, and it was supposed to be used for some demonstrations, but no demos were actually held at all during the show. It's unfortunate, but you know, I thought things were a little bit rushed that day. Either way, it was a nice show. Carl said they had a better turnout than they expected, and if there was a demand for a sequel, they would definitely do it. So I, for one, am demanding a second New York Mixed Martial Arts Expo. So let's get that going, and let's show New York what this sport is about so we can get one step closer to legalization in all 50 states, especially New York. You can expect my highlight video and my interviews with the fighters starting to come online towards the end of this week, I'm hoping. And if you missed the show, you definitely missed something pretty cool. So go to mymmaexpo.com and demand that they have a sequel to this event. So the big news this week is the continuing insanity over Affliction's demise, or rather now the culmination of Affliction's demise. Almost all of the fighters who are on the card have new contracts now and new homes, so let's go over that real fast to update you. Strikeforce picked up a few of the contracts, and just in time for their ailing card on August 15th with Gina Carano and Chris Cyborg headlining it. That card was supposed to have four title fights originally, and pretty much almost all of them got screwed up somehow. At this point, we have lost a heavyweight title fight because Alistair Overeem is out due to a hand injury against Fabricio Werdum, that was going to be his opponent. There was word that Overeem was going to be replaced with Paul Buentello, which he mentioned on our show last week, but he wasn't too sure about that. At this point, that fight has been completely scrapped, so the heavyweight title will not be defended at that card. However, Renato Babalu Sobral will defend his light heavyweight title against Gerard Musashi, who's now on the card, and Jay Haran is going to come in to take on Nick Diaz. He's going to replace Joe Riggs, and that's going to be for the welterweight title, and that's going to be a definitely pretty great fight. The UFC has scooped up plenty of great fighters, too, adding Vitor Belfort versus Rich Franklin at UFC 103, taking Ben Rothwell versus Chase Gormley for UFC 104, and also getting Paul Semtex Daly, who might fight on that same show. Paul Buentello is also said to have signed with Zuffa again, and the WEC, not to be outdone, is also going to be getting Javier Vasquez and LC Davis, and they're going to fight this weekend at WEC, and they're also getting Dan Lazon, who is going to meet with Rafael Oliveira. Originally, Lazon was supposed to fight Chris Hordecki, and Oliveira was supposed to take on Takanori Gomi, but instead now those two will meet in the cage at some point. So in the end, even though Affliction is dead, their talent pool has now been released to other companies that actually have competition for these fighters. So look for these guys to start making a big impact. Ben Rothwell, I'm looking forward to. He's going to be a great addition to the UFC heavyweight division and could one day be a champ. I understand he's already looking forward towards getting a title shot down the line against Lesnar and maybe taking on Roy Nelson again. And Vitor Belfort also has been looking very good lately. So we'll see how he does against Rich Franklin and decide from there. Perhaps we're going to get to see a rematch of Vitor Belfort and Vanderlei Silva down the line. Affliction could have been a contender, but they made a lot of big mistakes. Paying fighters way too much was definitely their first mistake. Maybe if they didn't pay Tim Sylvia $80,000 to lose in 36 seconds, they might have been okay with their advertising budget. Maybe if they didn't get as many big-name fighters and held smaller-scale shows and just kind of worked their way up towards big-budget pay-per-views, they might have lasted longer. But we can say what they should have done for hours. The point is, they are gone, and their talent has moved on to much greener pastures. And the winners here are really the fans. Oh, and if anyone still cares, Josh Barnett's second steroid sample tested positive. So, way to go, Barnett. Clap, clap. Fedor had been the topic of some hot news last week, and that news has continued on to this week. Fedor held a very pointless press conference last week to discuss his future, and not really saying anything of much importance other than that he will headline the EA MMA game, a fact that I think most of us knew already, or at least suspected very strongly for that to be a fact. Dana White also held his own press conference after that, and announced some of his good news, including a television deal with the UK, and also talked about his talks with Fedor. According to White, they gave him a great deal that even let him do Sambo, and would have allowed M1 to be seen at the show in a big way. Banners and, you know, they told Fedor he could wear whatever he wanted that said M1 on it, all that kind of stuff. But because the UFC refused to co-promote, M1 turned down the offer. So who here is still a Fedor fan after hearing that kind of stuff? Vadim Finkelstein and the rest of the M1 executives, listen to me now, listen closely. Get your heads out of your asses. Why is the UFC going to co-promote with anybody at this point? Many have tried, all have failed. Fans, journalists, everybody out there has wanted the UFC to promote. It's not going to happen ever. They're not going to ever co-promote. And they've tried in the past. In fact, with Pride Fighting, which was a much, much bigger company with much, much better fighters than M1 will probably ever have. What does M1 have to offer? Even at the upcoming trilogy card, the Affliction trilogy card, M1 had two fights on the show, and they were both dark matches before even the Showtime fights began to air. And can you even name who those fighters were? Because I can't remember that. M1 runs decent little shows in Europe, but they have no real name power and not many real standouts in their fights. Essentially, what M1 does now is basically an IFL gimmick, but on an international level, and it works on a smaller scale. I'm not saying the shows are bad. The shows are pretty good, they're fun, but there's no real name power, and none of those guys really could probably ever carry a show. M1 needs the UFC much more than the UFC needs M1, and with the talent pool as deep as they already have in the UFC, why expand it even more with fighters they have no interest in? But what would an M1 UFC show even look like to begin with? I mean, would Vladimir Putin be in attendance, sitting ringside with David Spade? I'd love to see that happen. M1 has robbed us of ever seeing Fedor in the UFC, so what's left for him? Well, on Monday, Strikeforce announced that they, in fact, had managed to acquire Fedor's contract. So, suddenly jaws drop and drool trickles out of my mouth. Someone actually gave in to M1's incredibly stupid demands. So, this gives us at least a few opponents for Fedor, but ultimately, without Fedor in the UFC, the marquee fights that we want to see as fans are just not going to happen. We do now have the potential to see Fedor take on Fabricio Verdum, Alistair Overeem for that heavyweight title, Brett Rogers even, a few other guys, but we won't ever get to see Fedor versus Randy Couture, Brock Lesnar, or any other heavyweights who actually have some substantial ability to offer against Fedor. Word is that Fedor will fight in the fall, and it will be on Showtime, and not on pay-per-view, which is a first for The Last Emperor, and it will not be a title fight. Scott Coker is saying that he actually wants to build up towards a title fight with Overeem, or whoever the champion is by then, so we'll see how long that lasts. It's an interesting idea. We're going to hopefully talk to Coker at some point, and kind of try to understand what his game plan actually is coming into this. The question, once again, is what will this Strikeforce and M1 collaboration show look like? And will this help establish Strikeforce as a legit threat to the UFC? A main eventer is only as good as the opponent you put him next to, and I think Strikeforce is still very much a company for hardcore fans with an attempt to grab mainstream audiences. I think they'll cause some waves in the next year, but can they keep it up? It's too early to tell. I mean, Fedor still doesn't really sell pay-per-views as much as I like to think, even though he is one of the best fighters in the world. It's really hard to market a Russian guy who just can't speak English too well. So, we're just going to have to wait and see on this one. But back onto that press conference that Dana White had. White also announced that the Huntington Beach bad boy, Tito Ortiz, is back in the UFC. His rumored first opponent might be Mark Coleman, which will be an interesting fight to see. Tito hasn't actually fought in over a year, so it'll be good to see him back in the octagon. White has said that he wants to see Tito retire in his cage, so perhaps this could even lead to Tito versus Chuck Liddell again in a double retirement match. But that's if dreams can come true. I don't know why, but I'm actually kind of excited to see Tito back in the UFC and just fighting in general. It's been too long. I'm sick of hearing about his non-news with Janet Jameson and his wonderful little movie career and her pumping out twins and him claiming he's got multi-million dollar deals with random people. I guess he's not going to be starting his own punishment fighting championship organization either, or whatever his own little MMA company was going to be, at least not yet either. That's fine. Ultimately, the point, I guess, is to retire Tito inside the UFC cage. And with Tito's retirement, we will officially be at the end of an era. You could say Randy Couture ended that era when he first retired. Maybe he did, but then again, Randy jumped back in, then he retired again, and he basically just kind of killed that pretty quickly. But with Tito actually hanging up his gloves, we can definitely close that chapter of the book in MMA. This is a big transition time right now for MMA and the UFC, and I see a bright future ahead for MMA in America. And as a lot of the big-name fighters from the past start to retire, it's going to open up for the younger fighters. It already has. You know, we've got a lot of younger guys coming to the card, and a lot of the older guys are kind of starting to hang up the gloves or get to that point where they can hang up the gloves. So we're going to see the next year. Definitely going to be an interesting time. It's going to be a good period of transition, and I look forward to what we're going to see next. But now, moving overseas. Sengoku Ninth Battle was this weekend at Saitama Super Arena, which saw the featherweight Grand Prix Finals as well as the lightweight title on the line. And the big news coming out of that is Dan Hornbuckle putting out former UFC contender and Gravaka fighter Akihiro Gono, putting him out of action with a head kick in the third round of their fight. A nice kick right to the face. Hornbuckle was, in fact, winning the first two rounds of the fight, and he punctuated his performance with a sick kick that left Gono out cold for a few minutes. If you haven't seen it, you gotta watch it to hear the sound it made. It was a thing of beauty. Gono was taken out on a stretcher, and was later revealed to have suffered a concussion, possible brain hemorrhaging, and damage to his neck from his bad landing from the knockout, from falling down, hitting the ropes at an awkward angle. Gono has been reported to be alert and okay so far, and last we heard, he was still under observation in a hospital at the time of this podcast recording. That's what we've heard. So we wish him a speedy recovery. He's a good fighter, and I'm sure we haven't seen the last of him. Gono, however, wasn't the only fighter sent to the hospital that night. Hatsu Hiyoki also suffered a concussion in his match against Masanori Kanehara in the tournament, which he won. This resulted in Kanehara replacing Hiyoki in the finals against Michihiro Omagawa, even though Kanehara should have been replaced by Chan Sung Jung, who defeated Matt Jaggers earlier in the night in a reserve match. Why was Jung not added into the title fight despite winning his reserve match? Some suspect racism for the fact that he is a Korean and he's fighting in Japan. And honestly, I could see that as being true. What other reason is there for Jung not coming in? I haven't heard if Jung was injured prior to the finals, and that could have obviously been a reason why he wasn't moved on to the fight. But nothing has been announced officially yet, so we're going to keep following this as well. And if anyone is wondering about Omigawa's match, many are arguing that Marlon Sandro should have advanced after beating Omigawa on the feet, but somehow the two judges ruled the fight a draw. And because Sengoku has a must-decision rule, the two judges that ruled for a draw both decided Omigawa did enough to win, and he advanced into the finals. Omigawa was a dark horse to begin with in this tournament. Most didn't expect him to get past LC Davis, myself included, but somehow he did. The rest of this sudden uprise I'm suspicious about, but not really that compelled to dig around more. The featherweight Grand Prix turned into a strange mess, and I think marred the night with its strange happenings. The Japanese like to do things their way, and their Grand Prix overall was not too spectacular in my eyes. I think we need to have a lot less Grand Prix in Japan, too. I'm kind of sick of them. It used to be cool when Pride first started doing them, but now it's become a little convoluted and meaningless. The fighters aren't as important. The fighters aren't as big. It's just not really having the same impact it used to have. So, please, Japan, scale back on these Grand Prix tournaments just a little bit for me. Alright, also on that card, Blagoy Ivanov, the man who defeated Fedor and Sambo, and whose name is equally as hard to say as the other Japanese and Korean fighters I just mentioned, defeated Kazuyuki Fujita by split decision, making him now 2-0 in mixed martial arts. In a very competitive fight, and we also saw Kazuo Misaki picking up a huge victory over Kazuhiro Nakamura, choking him out with a guillotine in the first round. Overall, though, I was not too impressed by the Sengoku card and the fights. I just couldn't get into the card that much. Sengoku shows have been hit or miss, really, in the last few events, and they usually are miss for me. They come off feeling sometimes like a Pride Bushido show, but with lesser-known fighters and just not as good fights. And sometimes I can only take it so much of not knowing who a fighter is. Sometimes I need to be compelled to watch, and this was not a show for American viewers. Granted, it's a Japanese company, and, you know, they don't have to do anything for us. It was really, you know, they're made for Japanese fans in mind. They're not made for Americans. But nonetheless, the old Pride shows used to have a lot more foreigners, and even Dream now still have a lot more foreigners on the card, and that keeps us interested in it. This show had 6 foreigners out of a total of 26 competitors. I think it was 3 Americans, 2 Koreans, 1 Brazilian. And it just came off like a glorified Shuto card, and Shuto has been putting on much better events this year lately. So, Sengoku, 9th battle, not too impressive, not too exciting for me. But I am looking forward to other fights from them. Maybe we'll get to see some good stuff coming out of Dream also. So, that's the rundown from Sengoku. If you actually managed to listen through all that and all those Japanese names being butchered by me, I applaud you. So, because of that, we're going to take a quick break right now, and when we return, we're going to be joined by El Guapo, Boss Rutan. So stick around, you don't want to miss that. It's going to be a really good interview. We'll be right back. Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Cageside MMA, carrying brands from around the world, such as Triumph United, Clinch Gear, Twins, Wendy, and Bad Boy, as well as their own well-crafted brand of Cageside MMA products. CagesideMMA.com is your internet superstore for all MMA gear and apparel. Battle-tested and fighter-approved, you won't find better quality or better service from any other site carrying their variety of gear, apparel, and workout equipment. Head over to CagesideMMA.com where you can shop 24/7 or call 919-477-1999 Monday through Friday. If you don't, you'll regret it. CagesideMMA.com. Alright, and welcome back to Fight Nerd Radio. Joining us now is a man that really needs no introduction, but I'll give him one anyway. He's a 3-time King of Pancrase, 1-time UFC heavyweight champion. You can catch him now on HDNet on Inside MMA. He is El Guapo, Boss Rutan. Boss, thanks for being here today.
Hey, my pleasure.
Alright, now, of course, big thing in the news right now is talk about Fedor and what's going to happen with his contract in with UFC and wherever he's going. Dana White just had his press conference to announce that Fedor isn't going to be in the UFC. Fedor had his press conference 2 days ago to say he's not going to be in the UFC. What do you think is it going to take to get Fedor into the UFC?
You know, I would love to. I'm the same as everybody else. Everybody wants to see Fedor, of course, against Brock Lesnar and all the rest of the UFC. But, you know, they, from what I understand, and that they want to book promote with M1. That's really what M1 wants, Vadim wants. And not a bad night for drinking because I don't drink anymore, but I'm just a little slow on that. If Dana, he doesn't want to go for one, because that doesn't happen, well, then it's not going to happen. But I heard also that they offer an insane amount of money.
Is there even a reason for Dana to want to co-pro with M1?
No, because he's so big, why would he? You know, he says the only thing that's going to happen is going to make M1 big, and obviously he doesn't want that.
Yeah, there's really no reason to push M1. I mean, considering, you know, if they're so big, they could easily be promoting Fedor on their own, but they're still, everything they've done is with a co-promotion, it seems, anyway, with other companies like Bodog or Strikeforce and that kind of stuff. All right, now, yep. Fedor... sorry, go ahead.
No, I said, I know, but it's such a shame, you know, because the fans really want to see this fight. And, you know, if they start throwing money at him, a large amount of money, and a cut on the papers, and all that, pretty much the rest of what he wanted... But not the co-promotion, you know. That's the deal breaker. It's so sad.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be robbing us of a fight we all want to see coming up. Now, some other news about Fedor, of course, is that Fedor has been announced to be in the EA MMA video game. Now, have you been approached to be in either the UFC video game or the current upcoming EA MMA game?
Yeah. I'm in the upcoming EA game. It's already signed. The deal is already everything done. That's weird that they approached Fedor. Now, I mean, I'm talking about that almost a year ago that I signed that thing.
Oh, so it's been in the works for quite some time then.
Yeah, it's been busy for a long time. But I guess, you know, they tried to gather all the fighters, so maybe that'll take some time.
Now, are you going to be a playable character, or are you going to be like, doing like commentary or a little bit of both in the game?
I'm going to be one of the fighters.
Okay, awesome.
I'm going to be one of the fighters. From what I understand, Mauro Ranallo is going to be one of the commentators.
Oh, that's cool. I can't wait to finally get a chance to liver punch somebody.
Ah, that's going to be good, right? Over again and again.
You know it. All right, so you're also going to be in the upcoming action figure form as well from Jack Specific. Have you had a chance to see your prototype in that?
No, not yet. You know what? And now you mention it, I should give those guys a call because they're big fans, and we show you the process, how everything goes, but it's totally slipped my mind. Man, if you see the list, I made a list about 2 days ago of all the stuff that I did for the last 2 months, and then what's on the horizon. It's just insane. And I go, I look at my wife and I say, holy, this is unbelievable. It's so much stuff, so that's why I lost that one. But it's good because you mentioned it now, and I need that, needed that because I needed somebody to send a list, wants to do an endorsement. So now I got another one. I got the DA and I got the, the little action figure.
I mean, I personally can't wait to see that figure myself, and again, I can't wait to beat up people in the video game playing as you. Have you been approached by Round 5 action figures at all to do more of a caricature type of figure?
Well, I don't know. I've been, let me see, somebody else from England, they approached me. That was one with an, that could speak. They had a pressure button, but there was, yeah, my agent said there was a problem with, and he said, go with this company, it's better.
All right, now, a lot of people might not know this, but you've been in a video game before, and in fact, that was Grand Theft Auto 4, where most people might know you in that game from a little video sequence, but you also did the motion capture for that game too, right?
Yes, I did all the motion capture, yeah.
So how did that work out? They brought you over to New York to do all the motion capture?
Yeah, that's it. They saw, you know, that clip on YouTube, the firefighting clip, that thing gave me so much work, it's crazy. And they also, they saw that. A lot of people, they play that clip from the beginning of their week in the office. Everybody sits together, apparently. And then they play the video clip, and everybody's happy, and they start laughing, and then they start their week. But they saw that clip, and they invited me. They said, if I want to do it, then I went to New York to Rockstar Games there. And we did it. That was long. It was 5 days, 7 hours a day. It was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun to do.
And it paid off for sure. I love telling my friends, you know, it's Boss Rudin beating up that random pimp in the middle of the street. Now you.
How cool is that? You know, the good. I asked them how violent they wanted to have the game, and they said, well, I'll give it all you got. I said, okay. And then I started 2 hours later, they came down and they said, okay, that's enough. You don't need to go further. So. I did more than they wanted. It was really funny.
They should have known better than asking Boss to give him everything he's got.
That's it. You ask me all to go all the way, I go all the way, but I'm pretty sick then. I'll create stuff that people go like, oh crap, maybe we shouldn't do this.
Are you a big video gamer yourself?
No, I'm not. And you know why? Because I know that it will hook me. And it's like, I see a movie, boom, I stay at the TV and I don't move. It's like one of those things. And if I play a video game, I know I'm going to like it way too much, and I don't have time for that. So what's going to happen then? It's going to happen when all the family is to bed, then I'm going to sit behind the TV and I'm going to start playing. I don't want it because I'm doing the drums right now. I want to play some drums at night when everybody goes to bed. I get these electronic drums set so nobody can hear me, put a headset on. And I enjoy that better.
So you're working on a musical career now?
You never know. You need a backup career, right? it's not that. I just really enjoy to play drums, you know, and doing some crazy stuff and see if I can get better and better. A friend of mine once already put me in a band, but, you know, I don't have the time for that stuff.
Is Stephen Quadros giving you any drumming lessons also?
You know, I went to Stephen one time, yeah, for like 2 hours, and he showed me a few things which you could do. And but pretty basic stuff, but but that's all what it is about, right? It's the basic stuff. Can you know, with simple hits, the way you hit a drum, you know, he says you can make it a whole different sound, and it's true. And when you hear Stephen play, that's pretty amazing, man. This guy can really play, trust me.
Yeah, we just had him on the show not too long ago, and it was a great interview also. And we know he's a great drummer. He's gonna be doing a lot of fun stuff. He's got a new band as well. So, it's going to be, hopefully we'll get to see you guys collaborate sometime on stage.
We thought about doing something like have a drum off. you know, and put the drum kits together, and then he starts playing, I start playing, going back and forth, and see what we can come up with. And like I said, you know, it's Steven has been doing this for a long time, and he's the same as me. He's obsessive compulsive, so he can play drums in the past. He played drums 8 hours a day, you know, to make things good. And he is really good. Like, he's not just that I say, oh, he's a good drummer. But this guy's top of the line.
Yeah, definitely, no doubt about that. Speaking of Quadros, you guys are known very well from a lot of fans for being what people consider to be the best commentary team of all time, Quadros and Rudin, in the old Pride shows. Can you give us a few stories maybe about some of the good old days from Pride?
Oh, man.
I'm making you think back now.
There's so many stories. There's so many crazy stuff. The stuff we did at airports. He and I, we have this sick humor, you know, we like to annoy people. And he's really a master of that, you know. Yeah, what can I say? This is for me funny. I don't know if this is funny when I say it, but I think this is really funny, and I have to walk away because we're standing in line waiting to get into the plane, you know, and we're waiting, and there's all around us, they're like Middle Eastern people, you know, and this is the time of the 9/11. So everybody, you know, they look around and they go, and it's all profiling at that time, right? So they're standing there, and he has his carry-on luggage. He has that handle has already pulled out from the carry-on luggage, and he has a bottle, an empty water bottle, and he just out of the blue, he's staring to the front of him, and he starts hitting the top of the carry-on thing. And in the beginning, you don't notice it. But when this goes on for like 3 minutes, and I tell you, 3 minutes is a long time, you know, everybody in the room, they start noticing it. And he keeps on doing it. People start talking, and he doesn't stop. He keeps on doing it. And stuff like that, I think it's really funny. And when we sat in the plane, this guy walks in. This is the same plane with all the people from the Middle East. And it's warm outside, but he's wearing this big jacket and he's holding it and he's looking very paranoid. He's looking left and right, and he comes by and Steve goes like he's having a clock, like a bomb underneath his shirt. Stuff like that. We got laser pointers. We will point at the stewards when they try to explain what you cannot do and how to use your seatbelt or that stuff. See who can, with his laser pointer, can hold a dot on the forehead as long as possible without getting in the eyes of the steward.
So you guys are like basically you're like troublemaking teenagers, basically.
Oh, that's what we are. We're little kids, you know. It's like sometimes we did a commentating show and we look. I hear and I said, "What is this?" And I looked to the side. He's eating an apple in front of the microphone. You see that? That's funny stuff.
Always professional, always professional. What about any stuff from Pride itself? I mean, was there any ever good skits you guys did that got left on the cutting room floor or anything like that?
You know, it's, we're sitting and we're doing an interview. We have to talk about, this is for ESPN Sports in Japan, and Pride wants us to do an interview with them. Now we have Coleman, and we talk about past fights. And suddenly the fight comes, and it's Coleman Tagara. And everybody knew this was fixed, right? And so I'm sitting there and I look at Steven, and I don't want to do this. You know, he said, "Boss, don't worry about it. I got it." And I said, "Okay, thank you, you know." So they start filming, and he says, "Okay," and then we have the fight between Tagara and Coleman. Wow, what a fight was that. Boss, set this one up for us. Now I'm under money, and now I'm talking about it. You see, things like that he would do constantly, and it's just to annoy people. And you see, of course, the skits that we did, that was always fun. You know, we, like, out of the blue, suddenly stop breaking things, and all the openings. I thought all the openings that we did, and I thought they were pretty funny. I thought we should have kept doing it. But then, you know, they changed producers and suddenly everything had to be the same as boxing. You know, like if I say, this guy had 12 fights with zero losses, I couldn't say zero. I said, well, I say zero to just make sure that people hear he never lost. No, no, no. In boxing, it's oh, so you got to say 12 and oh. And, you know, and then it became a boring production. It became the same as everybody else.
That's right. I think I remember that original production crew. You know, you guys did a lot of crazy stuff once the new team came over and Quadros was taken off the team. Things just kind of went a little downhill for a lot of fans, anyway.
Yeah, that was it. And then, you know, that was all story, and everybody knows the story. I'm not going to even want to go in there because it deserves no time, let me say that.
Yeah, it's a long, long drama, I'm sure. Now, I want to talk about something else. Now, I want to bring back to Affliction, which just recently closed their doors and rejoined as a sponsor for the UFC. And they basically have become the next casualty in the death of MMA organizations. Now, do you see any similarities between Affliction's death and Pride's death?
Not a lot. Affliction came in late. They started throwing a lot of money. They thought that was enough. I think they should have done more promotion on regular TV. You want to capture the people who don't know the game yet. Pride. I called Pride a long time ago to start promoting in the U.S. Like 4 years or 5 years before they considered it. And they didn't want to do it. They told me, nah, it's already big here, we don't need it. I told them, I said, America's the way to go. That's the big country, that's where everything happens. But no, this one's good enough. And then they went in way too late. I think that if Pride would have done it all the way back, like 4 years before they did it, they would have made a killing. I think they could have done it because then there were two big organizations. So I don't see that similarity. It's just I think that they jumped in on the boat too late. That's what I think to Pride. Yeah, you know, and Affliction is that kind of way also, yeah, if you think about it. That's about it, what I can come up with.
Did you think Affliction would make it past the third show and continue promoting after that? Did you think that Affliction would continue promoting events after their upcoming event, which would have been this Saturday?
No, I don't think so. I think this is it for them. And for the people, and I went out yesterday with a whole group of fighters and Tom Atencio, and we went to the Marine base, Miramar, and we did some signing there for the Marines. And of course, we had dinner afterwards, and then, you know, everybody was wondering why they didn't continue the show. And it was a real simple answer, and I didn't think of it. That was stupid. They didn't continue the show because it was too close to the show. The datum, when George Bonatez spotted it, was only 10 days out. He says, and if you don't have the main event, what's going to happen is all the people that order pay-per-view, you know, and they don't see that main event between George Bonnet and Fedor Emelianenko, they want their money back. And if they start suing, apparently they can sue for like $2,100 per person. So even if they want all the money back, that will be a nightmare. There were a whole bunch of people that were going to try to start suing them. And that's why they didn't put it on, because it was too close to the event. And that's why, you know, the people didn't know yet. A lot of people wouldn't know that Fedor and Barnett was up.
Wow, that's a lot of money to be thrown around. Now, in the past, you've mentioned when you were supposed to fight Chemo, I think back in 07, Chemo tested positive for steroids, and the fight was off. You had some really harsh words for him and other steroid users. And now Barnett has tested positive for steroids for, I believe, the third time in his career. Well, how do you feel about Josh testing positive, especially for a fight of this magnitude?
The thing is, if it's proven, you know, I'm not gonna say, if this is proven, then I have no respect for this guy. I have zero respect. If they look in the mirror, they don't see a real guy. They see somebody they're not happy with, and because they're not happy with it, they shoot themselves up because then they feel better about themselves, and then hopefully they can fix what they see. They're not happy with what they physically can do themselves. Well, they're going to need a little help. And I just can't stand it. I, when When you do it in bodybuilding and in power training and in power lifting and all that stuff, go ahead. I can totally understand this. I really don't like everybody's doing it. And maybe even in baseball, because they say, you know, everybody's doing it, right? And but let's not go there. But fighting is a mental game. Fighting is about the guy who's got the biggest ball down the chain, who gets a punch, who can come back from that. It's a gamer technique. It's like, if you don't have the power, well, then you better make up a technique. You know? And once you start crossing that line and you say, okay, I want to be physically more strong, and with it, because everybody's doing it, that those lines say, yeah, Volker. Listen, I've never done it. Ever. And, everybody always said, oh my God, and he was so strong, it was all natural. I didn't do anything. Now, if I can do it, there's a lot of other guys who can do the same thing with that. So that's why I think it's cheating, and I think it's for people who don't believe in themselves.
Now, in Japan, there's no real sanctioning of body to do any drug testing, is that right?
Yeah, that's true.
And a lot of Josh Barnett's fights have been in Japan, so I mean, how many other fighters do you think that are out there that have been roiding up for years that we don't even know about?
A lot. You know, I mean, well, I don't need to say anything. We kind of can pick them out ourselves, right?
All right, now I want to talk about something else now, moving on. You used to be training with Kimbo Slice for some time during his Elite XC days, and I know you guys had a falling out, and Kimbo's going to be appearing on the upcoming season of The Ultimate Fighter. What are your thoughts on Kimbo's appearance in that show?
I think it's a real smart move from Dana and Mike Imber. Actually, Mike, Kimbo's manager, this guy is just a phenomenal manager, and he put this nice little deal together, and I think it's great. It's very smart because people, you know, when we walk in the street with Kimbo, everybody recognizes this guy. You know, so a lot of, I bet you this season will have the most viewers ever. We'll break all the records.
That's what they're betting on.
Because of Kimbo.
Yeah, that's what they're betting on for sure. How do you think he's going to do in the show?
Oh, you know, that's a difficult one to ask because we have some good guys, from what I understand, isn't there also. And I know what Roy can do. And, you know, Kimbo is pretty new to the game. So that could be already a big problem. And then, but if, I just hope that when he went in there, that he just was open again to information. And like yes, when he walked in the beginning in my dojo, that was okay. But then after a while, they start believing themselves. And that's just not good.
Yeah, definitely not. So it's really just a matter of which Kimbo is going to mentally walk into the house.
You know, I don't know, one thing, he's a target right away, right? Everybody who can eliminate him is going to be the man, so to say. But then again, you know, look what it did to Seth Petruzzelli. We didn't hear anything from him anymore. You know, so I don't know. I think it's great for ratings, and let's hope that he puts himself open. And even when I say that, you know, it's only like two months in the house. What can you learn in 2 months?
Yeah. Well, time will tell. We'll find out in the next season of The Ultimate Fighter 10. And that was the portion of the show sponsored by Zuffa. Thank you, Dana White. All right, now, I wanted to also ask, you know, you had your comeback fight, if you will, about 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, against Ruben Villarreal, and that's been the last time we've seen you in the cage. Is there any chance we might see Boss come back one more time for one more fight?
No.
That makes
no.
me a very sad fight, Nerd Boss.
When this happened with Fader, I told a friend of mine, I said, give me one day. Let me see where I am. Because I started training 4 weeks ago, and I always get in shape really fast. And I was, man, flying rounds, but there was stand-up. So I said, let me do my interval, rounds, which is a very heavy... it's a very heavy workout that I put together. It's conditioning and power training all at the same time, back and forth, power conditioning, a lot of exercise, 12 different exercises, 6 minute rounds, each exercise 30 seconds, really heavy. I said, well, if I can do 3 rounds of that, normally, like for my last fight, I did 7 of those, but if I can do 3, you know, I'm going to put myself on the list because it's a lot of money, you know, but I knew right away where I was. When I did it, and thank God I didn't make anything. I didn't throw it out like, oh, let me see, you know. But no, then I realized it's only when you stand up fighting and go Ground Fighting and the Mixture is a whole different ballgame. You know, the reason why you get so tired in mixed martial arts is because you have to do it all three together. Now, everybody knows this, but 95 of the gyms, apparently they don't know. So what they do is, okay, today we do wrestling, tomorrow we do submissions, or in the morning we do wrestling, and in the evening we do submissions, and then tomorrow, in the morning, we do, okay, let's do Thai boxing, and then in the evening we do the submission. And that's the most dullest thing that you can do. Because if I roll on the ground, once I'm, again, not with my knees, but if I would roll on the ground in the bed, I can keep rolling and rolling and rolling. I mean, I can roll for 45 minutes an hour and don't get tired. When I stand up, I can go again. I can do it easy. I can do round after round after round. And it's the same as my resting, pretty much. But then if you put it all three together, then suddenly you realize you can do, hopefully you can do 5 rounds if you really push it. And that's why you're getting so tired. And that's why you still see people or fighters getting tired in the ring because they don't put it all together in their training.
So what's a typical class over at the Elite MMA gym that you teach? Is it like kind of like everything all at once?
You know what? There's one rule that we always do. It's always, if it's striking, it's always with wrestling. First of all, that happens. So striking and wrestling only. And then we have like a couple of times a week, we do the whole thing. We the gloves are a little bit bigger on the knuckles, MMA gloves. And then we go hard, you know, and then of course we try to save each other on the side to the party before we go to low kicks. We go, you know, we go to take somebody out. And but then to really, that's already you're going to get tired there, but to really mimic the conditioning, the striking and the pull. Like striking, you push the whole time. Every time you strike, that's kind of pushing, right? You're stretching your arms. And when you go to the ground, pretty much everything is pulling. So those are two muscles that don't really work together. If you've been pulling, and now you got to go back on your feet and start pushing, you know, that doesn't work together. That's why I have those hard workouts with those rounds, and I take 12 exercises, and they're all pull and push, and pull and push, and pull and push. And in between the pull and push, they're all conditioning exercises. And that's, you mimic there, you come very close to a real fight, to getting up, going down, standing up, sprawls, that's really where the conditioning happens. But of course, we spar like 4 times a week, 90%. We go hard.
All right, I'm just getting tired listening to it, boss. That's already a workout for me right there. Right now.
Well, you know what? As far as we had a guy from Never Back Down, right? The teacher from Never Back Down.
Oh, yeah.
And he came over and he asked me about those workouts, and we were filming it. And I said, well, if you want, we can do half a round. You know, we do a 3-minute round with you. I take only 6 exercises. And then see how you do. And he was all like confident, right? And he goes, okay, yeah, all right. And they start filming. Man, he's a very well-behaved, well-spoken guy. He lost it, man. After the climax, he was like, I don't know how you fucking... Well, he was like, he had no clue how heavy it was. I said, well, there's only half a round. So we do a whole round of those and 7 of those, you know? And then people start to realize, okay, it's a whole different ballgame, mixed martial arts.
Definitely. Have you had a chance to actually watch Never Back Down?
Yeah.
What do you think about it?
I have no clue what the people say. I liked it. I thought the fights were great. I have no clue what people, you know, there were some things in that like a toe hold that doesn't work and a knee bar for the wrong setup, but who knows? You know, nobody knows this. Who doesn't know that stuff? But I thought it was really good. Oh, the punch kicks, the Muay Thai takedown goes from transition to transition. Yeah, I'm impressed.
Yeah, I've kind of referred to it as basically being the Karate Kid of my generation. It has a lot of the values that we have in today's generations, today's kids. And I don't see it being too far of a cry from a Karate Kid kind of setup. I mean, that's really what it was. I enjoyed it, too, for what it was. You know, you can't really take it like it's Citizen Kane. Simple as that.
Yeah, I liked it, too. And at the same time, that movie Red Belt was out. And I thought that wasn't for me. I thought those fight scenes were okay all the way back in the early UFCs. Because it was, you could see that the producer that he trains to hit you. Because because obviously you brought a jiu-jitsu guy in because what you saw on TV was 90% was on the ground. You know, and that's why I like Never Back Down. It started on the feet and the nice punches and then the takedowns and the arm bars and everything. So, yeah, I like it. And like you said, it was the same as Connecticut.
How's your movie career going? We just saw you recently in Paul Bart Mall Cop with Kevin James, and you're going to be in Sinners and Saints coming out soon. What's going on with the movie career these days, boss?
You know what? I like Paul Bart also, I was one of the bad guys originally, but I didn't have the time to go 4 weeks to Boston. I said, give me a small part, and I looked through the script, and I saw the drill sergeant. I said, why don't you do this? You know, I said, I come in, I shoot the thing, boop, and I go out, and I can go on with my stuff because I'm just very busy. So that's how that came along. And now Kevin is doing a new movie. It's called Zookeeper, and I'm in there, and it's only one scene. It's a pretty big scene, but and I'm playing a wolf. I'm the voice of a wolf, not a cartoon, but a real wolf. And he's a zookeeper who can talk to animals. And you know, Cher is a voice. Stallone is in there. Adam Sandler is in there. There's a whole bunch of people in there that do voices. So it's pretty fun. I already did that whole session, and now we got to go in and tweak that. That is fun. I'm doing a project with Cartoon Network, and that's it looks really good. I just saw the first episode that they did, and that's really broadcast. It's a project to get kids off the couch and to do something, you know, so they get a little bit of in shape. At least they do something while they're watching TV. I just shot like 8 short comedies called Dusty Peacock. That was Kevin James / Stony project. I did three episodes for Mad TV, for the people of Mad TV. That's also a big episode. And that was really good. And those people now want to take something around me because they were, they want to press. So that was pretty cool. I did a commercial, Cell Defense, instead of Cell Defense, for a new cell phone company. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And right now, we're working on 3 different shows for TV. And, you know, it's all about if one pops, it starts, but it looks really good. It looks like maybe two will do it. So, and in the meanwhile, now I finally told my agent, you know what? I want you to start working for a movie. Let's see if I can do movies. I just want to act or entertain. That's it. And it don't really matter. It's not like I don't need a movie star and God knows what. I like it. To be a good supporting actor, that already I would really enjoy. And then the good part, I don't want to do fighting or violence anymore. I try really to focus on the comedy, because that's working really good for me, and I like that way better than all the shooting and kicking ass. If it's a thing like a slash, like a rush hour, then okay, I'm good. Comedy and then action, I'm all for that. But you know, if it's action, only action, it better be a real good movie.
So, who's a director or actor you'd most like to work with if you had the choice?
Tarantino or Guy Ritchie.
So what kind of movie would that be? That'd be kind of like a little comedy action movie you're hoping for? What would the movie be if you could have your choice?
Yes, that would be like a comedy action, and like Lock, Stock, and 2 Smoking Barrels. You know, when you see that movie, it has a lot of comedy in it also. It's dark, but it's funny. And then, those are really quality movies, I think. And stuff like that I really would like to do. You know, when you have guys, and also when you see Tarantino, and when you go to the story. I have a story that I wrote a long time ago. I mean, in 96, I believe. And I think it's a pretty cool story, and I wish that I could get in contact with Tarantino. I've been trying for a while, at least left some messages at his agent, but nothing ever. I think if I can get in contact with him, because from what I understand, a while ago he wanted private classes with me. So I know he knows me, and that would be great, because I'm pretty sure we could create something cool.
Well, hopefully he's listening to Fight Nerd Radio right now, and he'll give you a call, hopefully, once this comes out.
That would be awesome, right?
We'll see if that happens. It'd be nice if people are actually listening to the show, too.
If it happens, man, I'll send you a huge present.
Oh, you got it. All right. Now, you also got right now, aside from all your movie stuff, your fight stuff, at some point you have to sleep, I know, but when you're not sleeping, I know you have your own workout equipment now, too, right?
Yeah. Sorry. It's called the BossCast. I'm looking actually at it. I'm walking in my back right now. It's the Body Action System, BAS, Boss. And,
clever.
It's really cool. Listen, I work out on it in my gym every time now because it's got aims. You have a head, you got a body torso, and it's got targets on there. So you have to hit it. The targets are shaped in the way you have to hit them in order to make it a good body shot. And there's a sort of plexus on it, so to say, made for that. And the head is in the head. You can uppercut, you can do everything on the head. When you hit it, it bounces back and right away back in place. Like a real head. You know, it's soft, so you don't even have to wear gloves if you like. I do it because it's better for your shoulders, you know, to train that like an acid. So I use gloves, and I think it's a great machine.
I've seen the videos of it on YouTube and on the website itself. It looks pretty impressive, and I know Boss doesn't make crappy products, simple as that. So if you put your name on it, it must be good. And it has your name, so it must be great.
We've been busy with this thing for 2 years, and the reason is that because I broke them. I broke them the whole time. And now, finally, we found one, and I've been beating the crap out of it for the last 2.5 months, and I go hard, and it's still in one piece. You see, and I told them I do not want to have it on the market if it's not going to stand up to me because then, you know, it's my name. We call the thing my name. So there's a lot of stake there for me.
All right, so I got one last thing for you, Boss, and this is just me being an absolute nerd and geek right now. I got to ask you, can you please do your Scarface impersonation for us right now?
Okay, all right. That's going to be difficult. Let me see, Rob, which one? Let me see. Podcast program, where the fuck did I first?
We can do it, don't even worry.
What is it? Fuck Casper Diaz? Fuck, oh yeah, Casper Diaz. What about that?
I hear reference material going on in the background. Are you playing the movie right now?
No, but it's, I'm in my backyard, and I'm pretty sure that my back neighbors of the Chinese are going to pull open the curtains because I was holding the telephone pretty far away from me because it's a lot of power coming out. You got to do this hard because it's a screaming sequence, and then it comes out the best.
All right, sounds good to me. All right, so Boss, one last thing now. How do we find out information about everything you're doing? Because you're on Inside MMA every week. You've got your own workout machine now. You got movies. How do we find out more information about what's going on with you?
Well, we got Boss Rutten MMA on Twitter. I'm doing that stuff now. And I actually got to fix it today. Something didn't work, so I got to fix this thing. But you can find, like, we went to the autograph sessions in Miramar. We went to 29 Palms, and I make all little video clips. And from the fighters, and we do some stuff, and then I send it to Twitter. That they turn it around into a link. You click on the link, and then you see little movie clips or pictures, whatever I send. So I do that, and of course the website, bossrutten.com. I'm gonna come out with an invention. I shouldn't say it because now you guys want to know what it is, and we're doing a patent search right now. And
I didn't hear that.
Gonna be something really cool. I think that people are gonna go like, oh man. That I didn't think of this. And I had that idea already for like 8 years, but I never had the chance to do it, and now I thought, you know what? I'm going to do it. Why not? And, you'll see, and I really hope that it is as effective as I think it's going to be. It's going to be a device to help you in training, and it will improve your whole body.
All right, we'll leave it at that, and hopefully, Boss, will get some sleep at some point during all this madness. Thank you very much for being on the show. Appreciate your time.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Hoodlum Fight Gear. Check out their gear and apparel at hoodlumfightgear.com. Also by Boston Brawler. Whether you're a Red Sox or a Yanks fan, you can't deny good designs. Check out bostonbrawler.com. And also by findmmagym.com. Looking for an MMA gym near you? Head to the best site to find your new place to train at findmmagym.com. And we are back, and you just heard from El Guapo, Boss Rutan. It is very cool having Boss on the show. I mark out hard for Boss. I'm a big fan. I think it showed a little bit how excited I was to have him on the show. So, very cool news about lots of Boss Rutan's new prospects. He's going to be in the EA MMA game, which is kind of breaking news. He's got an action figure on the way. He's going to have a live-action show on Cartoon Network. He's got a new movie coming out soon. He's got a workout machine. And at some point, he even finds time to play the drums. Boss Rutan is still the busiest man in mixed martial arts. I don't know how he finds time to sleep, let alone find time to talk with the Fight Nerd. So thanks again, Boss, big time for coming out and doing this interview with us. So UFC 101 is this weekend in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. UFC 101 Declaration. Good name, I guess. And the Fight Nerd will not be in attendance for it. I forgot to send in my press application, and it didn't matter anyway because I'm sure they'd turn me down like they have in the past. Thanks a lot, Zufa. But it is very cool to know that mixed martial arts is now legal in Pennsylvania, and a lot more shows are going to be happening there, and that means a lot less trips for me to New Jersey, or at the very least, not as long in New Jersey. I'm sick of going to Atlantic City, so any place that isn't AC is good to me. The main event for this evening will be BJ Penn defending his lightweight title against Kenny Florian. Florian is close enough to being the hometown boy in this fight, has a lot of momentum coming into this fight, coming into the octagon with 6 straight wins. Last time we saw Penn was at UFC 94, where he lost to an allegedly greased-up George St. Pierre. But before that, was looking pretty strong also and on fire against Sean Sherk and Jens Pulver. This should be an explosive fight, and Penn is looking motivated, in my opinion. But the only time we seem to see Penn motivated, I think, is when he thinks he can actually win and has already won the fight in his mind. Look back at some of his older fights, and you'll see what I mean. For his match with George St. Pierre, he was sluggish-looking, and he looked like he just didn't even want to be there. Then looked to his match before that with Sean Sherk, and he had that killer instinct back in his eyes. Even his match with Jens Pulver, there was that killer instinct. He had invested a lot of emotional content coming into this match, and that definitely helped him win. His mind, he had already won, the fight was over, he just needed to get into the cage, and kept his arm raised. This match, Penn is looking very confident and is training very hard, probably harder than they did for George St. Pierre for the reasons I just mentioned above, because he thinks he's already won the fight. But Kenny Florian is no pushover either, and I think Florian will take him to the edge and back, despite what a lot of people are saying. And I think we will see a TKO at some point in this fight, if not a KO. I would like to see Florian win, but I'm a little unsure. I think Florian is hitting his peak right now, so I want to see him win it. But Penn is also coming off a big loss, and he's looking super motivated because I just think he thinks Florian is below him. So that's the BJ Penn you got to kind of be careful with. That's the Penn that's very dangerous to take on. So I'm going to give this fight to Penn, even though I'm really hoping I'm wrong on this pick and that Florian wins. That would make me much happier. Other matches I want to talk about. Kendall the Spider Grove is going to take on Ricardo Big Dog Almeida. Almeida is a Jersey boy, and Grove, I believe, is still training with Penn. I'm going to go with Grove here due to his size. There's going to be a clear game plan here, and that's to keep it on the feet. This is going to be probably not a very exciting match, unfortunately. And I see Grove winning kind of a dull fight. It's not really his fault, it's just kind of more Almeida's style of fighting. But maybe we'll get lucky and we'll see Grove just kind of bum-rush Almeida and overwhelm him for a TKO. I do like Almeida, don't get me wrong, but I think the Almeida we've seen in the past is going to not really be able to offer too much against Grove. Kurt Pellegrino is taking on Josh Neer, Batman versus the Dentist. Both have, interestingly enough, lost to Nate Diaz, and both have fought Joe Stevenson, Neer being on the winning side and Pellegrino on the losing side. This should be a pretty good match, and I don't even know how it's going to finish. I'm leaning towards Josh Neer for this fight, with maybe a submission late in the fight. It's kind of a tough one to call, though. I'm looking forward to that fight a lot. Also on that card, we're going to have Aaron Riley taking on Shane Nelson, which is a rematch from UFC 96. That saw Aaron Riley come out on top in 44 seconds of the first round. I don't really expect a change in the result of this fight. I just don't think we're going to see a knockout that fast. But I do still predict seeing Riley having his arm raised at the end of this. Overall thoughts on the card, because I don't want to talk about it too much more. Lots of local guys from the East Coast, which is very cool. This show feels a lot like UFC 78, which was the last show they did in New Jersey, in fact, which I had the joy of going to. On paper, it had a lot of potential with a lot of hungry fighters, but by the end of the show, I thought it was one of the worst UFC shows I had seen at that point, and definitely the worst show I had seen live. I think maybe even to this day, one of the worst shows. Pretty much after the curtain openers, it went downhill. I mean, we saw at the beginning of the fight, beginning of the show was Akihiro Gono. He had a big win. And we saw Joe Lazone beating someone else also in like 48 seconds. You know, the undercard was really good. After that, it just got long, dull, not too exciting. And I actually spent more time trying to sneak closer to cage side than I did watching the fights because I had god-awful seats. I was sitting Well, I want to call it a nosebleed, but it was more like the brain freeze section. It was just terrible. But I did manage to, in fact, sneak down to the lower level and got on floor level, but that's going to be a story for another day. But either way, my point is, this card, as much as I want to be there, I don't think I'm going to be missing too much live other than the main event. Lucky for us, though, WEC 42 is the night just after that, and that's going to be a really fun-looking card. Miguel Torres will be defending his bantamweight title against Brian Bowles, and as good as Bowles is, Torres is just that much better. He's going to be keeping that gold around his waist. Undefeated Joseph Benavidez is going to take on Dominic Cruz, and Cruz definitely going to be a big test for Benavidez and his future in the bantamweight division. But I think Joseph is going to win, and will hopefully be able to finish Cruz, but we'll see about that. That's going to be the interesting point to see if he actually can finish this fight. Takeya Mizugaki, I think, will be successful in his fight against Jeff Curran. Not much more I want to say about that. And in a former fight that was going to be on the Affliction Trilogy card last week, LC Davis will be taking on Javier Vasquez, and I believe Davis is going to win this fight. Javi is good, but Javi's been out of action for some time. He's got some injuries. And Davis is on a roll. He's going to be the next big thing, I believe, in the WEC. Just give him some time. There's a lot of good fights on this WEC card, and WEC just keeps impressing me more and more with each show. But that might be just because I like the small guys a lot more. You know, in boxing, we have small guys. You've got your bantamweights, your featherweights, and other weights named after tiny, minuscule objects. But they become boring fights very quickly. It's basically just a lot of fast hands, no real damage, and you're basically stuck watching roughly an hour of nothing exciting happening, other than the occasional flurry, which is really just kind of like watching a pillow fight happen sometimes. But with the explosiveness of mixed martial arts, small guys can go at it, and it's like watching a hockey puck get smacked around in an NHL game. It's just exciting, back-and-forth action, takedowns, groundwork, rolling around, fast striking, fast hands, fast feet. It's a WEC. So keep it up, WEC. I'm sure I'm going to enjoy this card a lot more than UFC 101, and I look forward to all your future events, as I have been for your past events also. Also this weekend, in things not related to UFC, some local shows, if you're going to be in Ohio, check out the NAAFS Ruckus at the Riverside in Cuyahoga Falls. And that's going to be, once again, in Ohio. And King of the Cage is going to be holding their event in Oklahoma on that same night, called Gunslinger. So check that out if you're in Oklahoma. Both those events will be on Saturday as well. So I think that's going to wrap it up for this week of Fight Nerd Radio. Next week we're going to have an unexpected guest on the show, and that will be Fred Edish. If the name sounds familiar, it's because Fred is the man who, you might remember, got the snot stomped out of him way back at UFC 2, which was in 1994. And now, over a decade later, is stepping back into the cage to see what he can do. So we're going to talk with him. That's definitely going to be an interesting interview. And if you don't know who Fred Edish is, you should definitely look on YouTube for this man, and you'll learn pretty quickly why this is going to be a pretty interesting interview. Also on the website this week, interview with Richard Wong from Dazzling Hands Kung Fu, a highlight of the New York Mixed Martial Arts Expo, hopefully, and the first ever equipment review from the Fighter. We're going to be talking about the Shield, which is a giant kicking pad. You don't want to miss this. It's going to be a pretty fun video. And also, coming soon, a tour of the Extreme Couture Gym. We already have that. Now we're going to have a highlight reel of one of the pro training sessions that goes on at Extreme Couture in Vegas. Thanks again to my sponsors, CagesideMMA.com, HoodlumFightGear.com, FindMMAGym.com, and MMA Worldwide Magazine. Big thanks once again to Boss Rudin for coming on the show, and thank you, the listener, for your support. Don't forget to send your emails, responses, questions, theories, comments, queries, whatever else you got, to thefightnerd@gmail.com. And don't forget, of course, to check out thefightnerd.com after the podcast is over. I am the Fight Nerd. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.